From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. Brad Little won a second term as governor last night and told his supporters the election was a mandate from voters.
People are tired of record inflation, limited opportunity, and government leaders who ignore the struggles that diminish their opportunities.
Joining us today to break down all of last night's election results are our own Boise State Public Radio News reporter James Dawson, Kevin Richer, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, Scott McIntosh, opinion editor with the Idaho Statesman, and Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun. I appreciate all of you coming on today.
Thanks for having us, Gemma.
Hello, Gemma.
Hi.
So I want to start by listening to a little bit more from Governor Little last night from Idaho Public Television.
We pulled off a successful campaign, and it was broad and far-reaching from one end of the state to the other. To me, the election results today translate into giving us a mandate to keep our state on the path of incredible and unprecedented success, to continue to show Washington, D.C. and the rest of the country how to do things right.
So Little's win wasn't too much of a surprise. However, one of his opponents, Ammon Bundy, did make quite a bit of news during the campaign. So, Jimmy, I'm curious, what's your takeaway from the governor's race? And of course, everyone else chime in here as well, please.
Yeah, I would say that at least with the governor's race, you saw Brad Little in May's primary pretty much cruise to victory, 20-point win over Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan, which was his biggest challenge in this general election. Bundy was almost his most credible challenger insofar as he was basically the only one campaigning. You had Stephen Height, who really didn't run a campaign at all, raised about $9,000, and he was the Democrats on the ballot because of the Shelby Ronstadt fiasco back in March. It just kind of reinforces the polls that I've seen over the past several months where Brad Little's a popular governor. In Morning Consult's most recent gubernatorial poll in October, I believe it was. I mean, he's in the top 10 most popular governors in the country. So it wasn't really a shock for me. As for how many votes Ammon Bundy got, I was a little surprised. That was more than what I figured and what folks around the state who I talked to, they didn't figure he would break, maybe 10 or 12%, certainly not 17%.
Other thoughts on that? Because, Jimmy, I would say that I kind of thought, Ammon Bundy would get maybe around, 15%. I mean, he definitely got that more than that. But other thoughts from our other panelists on the results of that last night?
Yeah, Gemma, this is Clark. I think it was an interesting race. I think when you look at it, it's important to keep in mind that Brad Little got more votes than all of the other candidates in the gubernatorial race combined. There was nobody within 230,000 votes of Brad Little yesterday. And it was interesting. He actually got nearly the identical percentage share of the vote, 60% of the vote, that he did in 2018. But I think what was interesting and what was notable about it was that Stephen Height, coming in as the Democrat with 20%, established the floor of support for a Democrat in Idaho. It's the lowest percentage of the vote that any Democrat has got in Idaho in a gubernatorial race in at least 28 years. On the other hand, Ammon Bundy, the independent, had the largest share of the vote for any independent or third-party candidate running for governor in Idaho in the same last 28 years, which goes back as far as the Idaho Secretary of State's races are available online. I was not surprised to see Ammon Bundy do as well as he did. And neither was Kelsey Mosley Morris from the Idaho Capital Sun. That was right around what we were expecting. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that Ammon Bundy was the only candidate in the gubernatorial race who ran what could be called a traditional campaign, where he campaigned across the state of Idaho. He launched a lot of social media ads. He had a lot of signs that his supporters placed. He was attending town hall events left and right all across the state. He still got crushed. He only got 17% of the vote compared to Brad Little getting 60% of the vote. You know, but it is interesting. Ammon Bundy has reset the new high mark for what an independent or third party candidate running for governor in Idaho can achieve. And he did that as an outsider, as an anti-government activist, as someone who has clashed with state and federal law enforcement numerous times over the last year, and someone who at one point was banned from being in the state capitol building for being arrested multiple times after protesting COVID-19 precautions and disrupting legislative hearings and resisting arrest. And so I thought that that was interesting. Brad Little winning did not surprise me. Brad Little getting the same exact percent of the vote that he did in 2018 didn't surprise me. I think there were weird dynamics in that campaign. But it was a pretty interesting race for sure. I'd love to hear. I think Kevin or Scott was jumping in, so I'll let them finish their thought.
And Jim, I think you add it all up, and it's kind of a muddled mandate for Brad Little. I mean, as Clark pointed out, Little was right at about the 60% mark where he was 4 years ago, but this is such a different campaign. I mean, Stephen Hite hardly campaigned on the Democratic side. So that helps Brad Little's overall vote tally. It helps his overall percentage. Even in a red state, that matters. 17% of the vote going to Ammon Bundy is a pretty clear message that Little has some problems on his right. He has, you know, conservatives and hardline conservatives who are not happy with him. They're not happy about how things went down during the pandemic. So it's not as strong a mandate for the governor as you might think.
Okay.
I think the one thing that I would add,
go ahead.
The one thing I would add is that it's pretty clear that a lot of Democrats voted for Brad Little, perhaps concerned about Ammon Bundy, making a serious threat. Because if you kind of look at the vote totals, kind of the baseline for Democratic statewide candidates was around 150, 160, or 155, 165, 165,000 votes. And Stephen Hite got 120,000 votes in that neighborhood. So it's clear that there are probably a lot of Democrats who added to Governor Little's vote totals. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the constitutional amendment now that was on the ballot. Lawmakers want to be able to call the legislature into session whenever they want. Currently, only the governor has that power. However, last night, voters agreed with lawmakers by a pretty small margin. Scott, you wrote about this overnight. In your opinion, what does this mean?
Well, this clearly is a reaction to what happened during the pandemic. This was a reaction to gubernatorial mandates. I think there was, you look at the change of the election laws, you look at the emergency declaration, the stay-at-home orders, you had health districts that were passing mask mandates and other orders, and the legislature was just kind of sitting on their hands, not able to do anything. And so I think from what I've heard, that is most of what this was about. This was about empowering the legislature to call themselves back into session when they feel the governor is stepping out of bounds and putting some power back into the legislature. Now, of course, we can probably guess what's going to happen. It's probably, we're not going to have a pandemic every year, but I suspect we're going to have the legislature calling itself back into session pretty regularly. We've seen it in other states. We saw Utah has done it recently, and they've been calling themselves back into session regularly. So I think, whatever the purpose or whatever the reason or the goals for the constitutional amendment, I think it's without question that we're going to see legislators back in Boise more regularly throughout the year. And sometimes it's going to be for reasons that really aren't necessary for a special mm-hmm. session.
So can I ask this question in regards to, the legislature being able to call themselves back into session? And that's the financial aspect of this, because they don't come back into session, for free. They don't volunteer their time. So what does that potentially then mean for this part-time legislature potentially maybe becoming three-fourths time, and the fact that that is taxpayer money that will be paying these legislators? I mean, Is that a concern that anyone should be having?
You know, I don't know if it's a concern, but Jimmy, you're absolutely right. There is a cost. There is a cost to the taxpayer. And historically, it's been around $30,000 a day extra expense when the legislature does come back in for a special session. Legislators' salaries are all fixed, and so that doesn't change. Mm-hmm. But there's travel and per diem expenses. There's the expenses of having the temporary staff that are only associated with the Idaho legislature being in town. There's security costs. And so, yeah, and Scott pointed this out in his column that came out early this morning. And I thought that that was a good column. But yeah, historically, it has been about $30,000 a day. And we saw this in 2021, right? During the longest legislative session in state history, where the legislature refused to adjourn. And there were these long recesses. And the bill kept adding up between travel and per diem and reimbursements and security. And so there is a cost to the taxpayer. I don't know. And that is a concern. That is a concern that I heard that some people voiced when they were talking about this question being on the ballot, how often the legislature would be calling itself back in session, whether we would be getting away from this idea of a part-time citizen-driven legislature where they come to Boise for about 3 months a year, and then they spend the rest of the year living and working in their districts. And so it remains to be seen, but I agree with Scott. I think we're going to see the legislature back in town more and more mm-hmm. often. They have the ability to do so without the governor's approval. And with the balance of power, with the Republicans retaining their supermajority, the Republicans have the votes to call a special session without any input from the Democrats. And so I do think that we'll be seeing more and more special sessions in the state of Idaho at the expense to the Idaho taxpayers. And that was the biggest surprise to me, was the constitutional amendment passing. That was the thing that surprised me the most of this year's general election results in Idaho.
Yeah, I agree.
So I want to turn to a race that got quite a bit of attention, and this is the attorney general race. Let's take a listen. This was a race between Raul Labrador, who won last night, and he was up against Democrat Tom Arcouch. So Labrador was speaking on Idaho Public Television last evening. He told supporters he is ready to take on the job of Idaho's top lawyer.
The people of Idaho deserve an attorney general who understands that his job is to represent the people and not the bureaucracy of Idaho. And I think the people of Idaho will be proud of the work that we will do. We will hire the best lawyers. We will hire good people that want to contribute to the state of Idaho and want to represent us.
Now, the former GOP congressman beat out current AG Lawrence Wasdin in the primary back in May. And as I mentioned last night, he defeated Boise attorney Tom Arcouch, and he will become the attorney general of Idaho come January. Now, as for Arcouch, who was the Democrat, he had a lot of GOP support, including endorsements from 50 Republicans, like former Governor Phil Batt, former State Senator Patty Ann Lodge. And last night, Labrador brought up those GOP endorsements. Here he is again on Idaho Public Television.
I have a message, short message for the media. Stop listening to the 50 Republicans who think that they're relevant, because tonight showed that they have no relevance in the future of Idaho. This race was about the future. It was not about the past. And together, we will make Idaho a better place for our families, a better place for our businesses, and a better place for our children. I love you. God bless.
So I want to talk about Labrador and his message for the media, but really maybe more of a message for these Republican endorsements. Who wants to chime in first on this?
Yeah, I was there at the this is Clark. I was there at the Idaho Republican Party's election night rally when Raul Labrador made those remarks at the end of the night. And that was some of the biggest fireworks that we saw, where he called out the Republicans who had endorsed his Democratic opponent Tom Arcus. I think it was a little interesting that he addressed that message to the media, because there weren't any members of the media who made endorsements of that race. And I think it is noteworthy. And I think that it is justified to have coverage when, you know, dozens of current and former officials from one party break ranks to take an unprecedented step, largely of endorsing their opponent. So I think it was newsworthy that the endorsement was there. I thought it was a little funny that that he addressed the message to the media, but that's a very popular campaign strategy and really political strategy is to blame the media and attack the media and things like that. But yeah, one of the most interesting, you know, that was a moment where the gloves really came off last night at the Republican election headquarters, and that came really, really late in the evening. But obviously that was something that was on Raul Labrador's mind and something, a message that he wanted to see, to send to the people who opposed him. And I'll let everybody else jump in. But Jimmy, you were right. That was a race that folks had identified because of the change in styles that we're likely to see with the Attorney General's office. But I'll sit down and let the rest of the panel talk about that one as well.
Yeah, I don't think that he was unjustified in saying that with that race. Really, if you look at last night's results, the only one that stands out to me as, you know, Republicans endorsing Democrats when a Democrat won was District 15 in West Boise. And that was barely a win by a Democrat, Rick Just, over a current representative, Cody Galloway. I mean, if you look at the primary, you had 19 either open seats or incumbents that were defeated by more conservative candidates in the legislature. So, I mean, you know, it's like Clark said, it's not insignificant that this large number of Republicans endorsed a Democrat, even though none of them were running for re-election or would hold office again after this election. But, you know, it's not totally unjustified by Raul Labrador saying that.
And I think very clearly listening to Labrador last night, he took it personally. And at some level, I that's understandable that he would take it personally, because some of the criticisms that he took from Republicans endorsing Arcus were pretty hard hitting. You know, these results are really kind of interesting. I mean, Labrador comes in at 62%, 63%, really strong mandate as he goes into office, but it's fairly much in line with where other Republican statewide office holders are coming in January. Just scrolling up to look at the lieutenant governor's race, Scott Bedke at 64%, and that's in a three-person race. So, you know, a little bit of diffused numbers there. Yeah. I think it's hard to say where this Republican Party really is lining up in terms of Labrador, who's the most conservative of the statewide candidates who won last night. Is this a sign that there's a wave within the Republican Party to move further to the right? I don't know.
At least the further rights are more motivated to vote, seemingly, in the primaries.
Yes. Right.
Well, and just a couple of caveats to
that. Go ahead, Scott.
You know, Labrador performed among the worst of his Republican candidates, colleagues on the Republican side. You know, Julie Ellsworth won with 71%, Debbie Critchfield won with 70%. So 62% for sure, you know, is a high total. But clearly there were a number of Republicans who crossed over to vote for Tom Arcus. And again, if you're looking at 160,000 is kind of the baseline for Democrats, 220,000, that's about 60,000 higher than the baseline for a Democratic candidate. So there are some caveats to that victory by Labrador.
Let's talk about Ada County and the commissioner's race. Let's start with that, because Republicans now hold all three of those seats on the commission. This is after Tom Daley and incumbent Rod Beck won last night. And here on Idaho Matters, we got to host quite a bit of a lively debate with the candidates last month. But Scott, start us off on this and what you think this means for Ada County, because I think there were expectations that at least one Democrat would get on the commission.
Yeah. I think it's an indication that the Republican Party is doing a really good job in Ada County. And Scott Bedke said that to our reporter, Ryan Supi, last night, that he gave kudos to the Ada County Republican Party. And it's clear that they did a really good job in this race. You know, Rod Beck is the incumbent, cut funding for a homeless program and appointed Raul Labrador and Ryan Cole to the Central District Health Board. Tom Daley was a former legislator who voted to cap the homeowners exemption, which caused the property tax crisis that we're in right now. You would think that they'd be vulnerable, but they ended up winning, and now the Republicans hold every seat on the Ada County Commission over Patricia Nilsson and Stan Ridgway, former Eagle mayor. There was a lot of money. There was a lot of development money. Steve Martinez from Tradewinds building contracting company. He has a couple of PACs that he donates to and runs, and similar to what he did with Diana Lachiando to get Ryan Davidson elected a couple of years ago, he did with Rod Beck and paid for some attack ads against Stan Ridgway to get Beck elected to that seat. I think the ground game for the Republican Party in Ada County is really strong, and it shows that, you know, even though Boise may be a blue bubble, the red wave is kind of crashing in on the rest of Ada County outside of Boise.
And in fact, we really saw that with all of the seats in Ada County, because all the seats that were up for grabs went to Republicans last night. So I'm curious, what does that say then about how voters in the county feel right now? And maybe, Clark, you can take this, because as Scott said, Boise, the city of Boise, not even the entire city of Boise, just certain parts of Boise have always been kind of that blue bubble. But maybe that's not the case when you go more out to the suburbs.
I mean, I think as you move farther west into Boise and into Ada County, it becomes purple and then it shifts from blue to red. I don't know. I think Scott's analysis was really sharp talking about the dynamics in the race. But I think that folks have to remember, even though they consider Boise this blue bubble, you know, the other communities in Ada County, you know, frequently have the city of Boise outgunned. And I'm thinking about the last two presidential election cycles where Ada County went for former President Trump both times. And so it's not a surprise. It's not new information that Ada County is split, that the other communities in Ada County sometimes are able to outvote Boise. And, you know, we've seen a lot of population growth. We've seen a ton of population growth in West Boise and a ton of population growth in Meridian, one of the fastest growing cities in the country. It'll be interesting to see what it means going forward, but I don't think that overall it represents this huge shift in Ada County. I think Ada County had already shown a lot of conservative tendencies. When we get into talking about legislative races, maybe at the end of the show today, we can talk a little bit about a really interesting legislative district in West Boise. But I thought Scott's analysis was pretty good, but I just wanted to remind people that even though Boise is one of the blue holdouts in Idaho, Ada County has voted conservative, and the smaller communities combined often are able to outvote Boise, was my thought that I wanted to share.
And it makes Ada County, Idaho, a lot different than urban centers in other Western states. I mean, Ada County, Idaho is not politically like Clark County, Nevada, or Maricopa County, Arizona, or certainly not King County, Washington. It's a lot more complicated than that, and a lot less fertile ground for Democrats.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Kevin. So I want to spend some time talking about the Board of Trustee election. There were four seats on the College of Western Idaho for their Board of Trustees. These were up for grabs yesterday. Now, four of the candidates ran on a GOP ticket, and they were really touting conservative values. They lost. Kevin, why were the CWI races important?
Well, they're important because they're going to determine a quorum of the governing board for that college for the next 2 years. And then that college board can do a lot of things that maybe are not necessarily part of the day-to-day mission of a community college board. I mean, you look at what happened at North Idaho College in Coeur d'Alene when you had a change in trustee races and trustees fired the president. They hired an interim president. There was questions about accreditation that linger to this day and impacts on enrollment and charitable contributions, all of that. So college trustees are a big deal because they have a great deal of sway over the day-to-day operation. So what happened at CWI with these elections? I was surprised at how resounding this win was for the three incumbents and the fourth candidate, Nicole Bradshaw, who was aligned with the incumbents. Those races weren't terribly close. And those four candidates who won in both counties. You know, these trustees have to run across all of Ada County and all of Canyon County. It was a sweep for the four trustees, and it wasn't even all that close.
And I guess, Kevin, that's what was surprising to me was when I looked at the results in Ada County, right? And we saw all of those seats up for grabs going to Republicans. And then, as you mentioned, yes, they have the CWI trustees. Everyone in Ada County and everyone in Canyon County votes for them. And to have such a resounding win, I found to be fairly surprising. So I don't know, Kevin or Scott, if that played into your analysis at all.
Well, two things are worth noting first, and then I'll get out of the way because Scott, I'm sure, has more to say about this. Two things to keep in mind. These are nonpartisan races. So when you show up at the polls and you fill out your ballot, there aren't R's and D's next to any of the candidates. So if you've done your homework and you say, okay, these are candidates who I want to vote for because I think they're aligned to a certain political party, you will have had to have done that homework ahead of time. So that's important. But what's also important, too, is towards the end of this campaign, you saw a lot of money coming in late. A group raised upwards of $100,000 in pretty short order to campaign on behalf of the incumbents and that slate of candidates. So a lot of money came into this race late. We'll watch and see what the Sunshine Reports tell us after the election. But I think at voters who were scared about what happened at North Idaho College and didn't want to see it happen at CWI, they wanted to stay the course. They don't want to see changes in operations. They don't want to see a change in the presidency or anything like that. So, again, I wasn't surprised that the incumbents won, but the margin definitely did surprise me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that was, number two on my list of surprises of the night. And I think the nonpartisan issue is important, that I think when people go to the ballot, and I think there's evidence, you can see it in Ada County and Canyon County, that a lot of people were just voting straight down the ticket for the R or the D. And they couldn't do that with the CWI. There's no R or D next to their names. And the other thing is that it's not only nonpartisan, but it's non-political. And you see these names, Molly Lenti, Jim Reams, Annie Hightower, those were incumbents. And so people already know them, but they're also active in the community. Nicole Bradshaw is active in the community. People kind of know them in a non-political sense. And so I think that played into it as well, that the people voted for the people that they know. And the position of CWI board trustee is not necessarily a political position, however much the other slate of candidates wanted to turn it into a political fight.
Let's take a quick listen to one of last night's winners. This is the new Lieutenant Governor Scott Bedke. He was speaking on Idaho Public Television last night.
Idaho has been successful because we focused on Idaho values. We put those values always back into policy, and that's why we've been successful.
So I do now want to turn to more of the post-election analysis, and this is the future of the legislature. So let's talk about some of the winners and some of the losers of the Idaho legislature last night. Now, all of the seats were on the ballot. Probably the most watched race was District 15. So, Jimmy, give us some background on this race. Who won? Who lost?
Yeah, so top line takeaway was Democrat Rick Just won by just a few hundred votes over current Representative Cody Galloway, the Republican who is trying to take over that seat. She had successfully beaten incumbent Senator Fred Martin, who was a much more moderate Republican in that district. And Fred Martin actually 2 years ago barely won that seat by 6 votes. So, it's a very competitive district in you know, one of Idaho's fastest growing cities. Why it was so interesting, though, was, you know, we didn't learn this until a little bit later, was that Democrats lost the seat in District 6 with David Nelson against former Senator Dan Forman in that rematch. So it ensured that they'd held steady with their seven senators. But it's really interesting to think that, for instance, you had the constitutional candidate Sarah Clendenin, who's an anti-vaccine advocate and heavily involved with Health Freedom Idaho and the Ammon Bundy campaign and more far-right activists like those. If she would not have been in the race and all of her votes would have gone to Cody Galloway, Cody Galloway would have won.
Well, and I think it's fair to note and that that former Senator Fred Martin actually endorsed Rick Just. And Jimmy, how do you think that potentially played into this? Because my understanding is that the former senator had never endorsed a Democrat before. Do you think that also maybe pushed some voters Just's way?
I think it could have, for sure. That district is interesting. You know, I've talked to Steve Birch, who's a Democratic representative there, who had run several times before finally winning his seat a few years ago. And he likes to characterize that district as one where personalities and the individual matter more than the actual, you know, candidate and their party affiliation. It's a split district, you know, so Steve Birch won re-election, but a Republican won the other House seat. And it was close to a Republican keeping that seat in the Senate. So could it have helped? Absolutely. To how much degree? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of lawmakers retired or they actually were primaried out during the primary election in May. So can we talk a little bit about how different the legislature will look in January? And whoever would like to start on that, it would be curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, this is Clark. And I think it's going to be a very new look Idaho legislature starting with the 2023 session. I was going through and I think it's like 45 or 46 new legislators, depending on how you count things, will be in office next year. I think the Idaho Senate is going to be more conservative than we've seen over the last 10 years. I kind of think of the Idaho Senate as sort of a check on the Idaho House over the last 10 years, and certainly before that as well, where maybe the Idaho Senate would refuse to hear or would vote down some of the more far-reaching stuff from the far right in the Idaho House. And so we've got a new crop of conservative senators coming in. Scott Herndon, Ben Adams coming over from the House, Tammy Nichols coming over from the House, Brian Lenny winning election to the Idaho Senate, Dan Forman coming back, former legislator Phil Hart coming to the Idaho Senate. So I think that we will see different dynamics between the Idaho House and the Senate. To back up, at the end of the day, I think the balance of power is going to be exactly the same. Republicans will retain their supermajority. And I think after all the seats switched and after everything happened, I think the balance of power is going to be the exact same in 2023 as it was in 2022. 28 Republicans in the Senate, 7 Democrats, 58 Republicans in the House, 12 Democrats. But we're going to see at least 12 new members of the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee, the Budget Setting Committee. We're going to see a new Speaker of the House, because longtime Speaker of the House Scott Bedke was elected Lieutenant Governor. We're going to see a new Senate Education Committee Chair. We're going to see new House Health and Welfare Committee Chairs. All that's going to be sorted out during the organizational session that will be coming up first couple days of December. But it's going to be unpredictable. It's going to be one of the largest classes of new freshman legislators in Idaho legislature's history. Changes to the Senate, changes to key committee assignments, changes to leadership. So I think that it's going to be a whole new animal over there at the Idaho legislature, even though the exact balance of power won't change at all. But I'd love to hear what some of the other folks think.
It's going to be. Sorry.
Sorry, Kevin. I was just going to say that, yeah, especially the Senate is going to be such a huge shift in power dynamics with all of the names that Clark mentioned, not to mention Cindy Carlson, who took out Carl Crabtree. You have Glenetta Zuiderfeld. I apologize. I'm probably mispronouncing her name. Coming in the Twin Falls area as well to the Senate, unseating incumbents, who are more moderate. So, the way that that's going to play out is, like Clark mentioned, we're going to have new committee chairs. But the people who were either retired or taken out in the primary, they sometimes, thinking of Fred Martin in particular, would block some of these more conservative social issues that passed the House and refused to hear them in committee. Whereas now, there could be a path forward to those bills getting on the Senate floor and potentially passing and going to Governor Little's desk.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how Senate leadership elections shake out because of all of these conservatives that have been elected to the Senate. And it could have been even different had the results been a little bit different last night. If Cody Galloway had won in District 15, she would have been another conservative in the Senate. If David Worley had won in Pocatello District in District 29, which it looked like for a while that he had won, that would have been another conservative Republican in that Senate caucus, with both of those districts now going to Democrats. It'll be interesting to see how the dynamic works between these more conservative senators and more moderate, more establishment senators. And we'll see in a few weeks when those senators get together and elect their own leadership team.
And we continue to look at how yesterday's election results will impact life here in Idaho. We will see a lot of changes in top offices in Idaho, including a new Secretary of State, as Ada County Clerk Phil McGrane got the nod yesterday from voters. Let's take a listen back.
What a task it is to run around a state the size of Idaho and to meet with so many voters across the entire state. It's a blessing to be able to have exchanged just words and to build confidence in our elections across the state.
We also have a new state superintendent, Debbie Critchfield, and a new Ada County coroner, as Rich Riffle just edged out current coroner Dottie Owens. But I do want to get back to our panel now. Kevin, let's start with the race for superintendent. Debbie Critchfield coming out as a strong winner last night.
Yeah, really strong winner. I mean, she got close to the 70% mark. I expected that she was going to win handily, but that is still a really impressive showing for her. And I think it sort of challenges a narrative that I've talked about before, and I think a lot of folks have talked about, that state superintendent is maybe the one race statewide that Democrats have a chance of winning. They came close in 2014, they came close in 2018, but maybe that had more to do with Sherry Ibarra, who won despite running these really low-key, really low-budget campaigns, almost winning in spite of herself because she didn't run a very aggressive campaign. Debbie Critchfield ran an aggressive campaign. She raised money. She won a competitive primary. She kept the foot on the accelerator through the general. She didn't take anything for granted. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe it's not as much about this narrative that this is a winnable race for Democrats. It wasn't a winnable race for Democrats last night. I don't know if Terry Gilbert ran as effective a campaign as his predecessors, but this was a blowout win, and maybe mm-hmm. one that makes me think a little bit differently about the politics of this particular race, this particular.
Well, Kevin,
office.
what I'm wondering too is that I wonder how much, name recognition for Debbie Critchfield mattered. She was on the State Board of Education for many years. She's seemed to have had a good reputation across the board. Whether she has been dealing with Republicans or Democrats or just regular folks, right? So I wonder how much that also potentially played into it and really had nothing to do with her or little to do with her party affiliation.
She probably had an advantage in name recognition with her time on the State Board of Education. That's for sure. I mean, that's not as high level name recognition as having mm-hmm. run for office and been on a ballot statewide. This was her first general election statewide. So to pull off the kind of numbers that she did, I was really taken aback by it. I knew she would win. I expected she would win, but 70% is fairly eye-opening.
And then there were three school bonds or levies on the ballot, including the largest school bond issue, I think, ever to make it to Idaho voters. Kevin, voters in Idaho Falls rejected a $250 million bond. But isn't this the third time in 5 years that Idaho Falls voters have just said no to a bond? And I know that there has been some reporting on the fact that one of their high schools is in real disrepair.
Yeah, I mean, this is the situation in Idaho Falls that they've been trying to fix for several years. And, you know, again, you know, a saga that we've talked about before that we see play out a lot. It's just tough to get two-thirds support for a bond issue of any size. And this one, $250 million. It'll be interesting now to see how Idaho Falls regroups off of that and how this may play out in other school districts, because I expect we're going to see another round of some big bond issues in the not too distant future. CUNA has been talking about one. West Ada has been talking about one, all having to face that really difficult two-thirds threshold.
Mm-hmm. We have about 4 minutes left in the show. I want to basically do a quick round robin with each of you. Same question. What else should we be watching out for now that the election is wrapped up? So, Jimmy, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I would say something else that kind of stood out to me was, you know, we talked about it previously on the show where the advisory question that was non-binding, basically asking whether voters approved of the bill passed during the September special session, which lowered taxes and increased education spending. Again, it doesn't actually have like a tangible effect on anything, but that passed by 80%. We're talking 452,000 votes, you know, compared to 114,000. You know, if traditional and more mainstream Republicans want to point to anything, you know, with this more conservative Senate and House coming online, I mean, they can just point to that pretty easily and say, look, we have a substantial majority of Idaho behind these policies, as opposed to, you know, doing things that that caucus or part of the caucus has advocated for, which includes, you know, cutting education spending and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I am actually running out of time. I've got my producer in my ear telling me that. I apologize. We couldn't get to that round robin with everyone, but I so appreciate all of you coming on the show. Big thanks to Boise State Public Radio News reporter James Dawson, Kevin Richard, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News. Scott McIntosh is the opinion editor with the Idaho Statesman, and Clark Corbin is with the Idaho Capital Sun. You can find links to everyone's reporting and all of our election coverage at BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. I encourage you to look at all of the reporting from these journalists. We appreciate all of you. So thank you so much for taking this hour with us.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.